Can we get over our addiction to IP? We answer that question and more this week on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is the show where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, collectibles, IPs, sex strikes, all of that and more. I am your host, DJ Wooldridge. With me, as always, is Roxy Stryer. Hello, Roxy.
Hello, DJ.
How are you doing?
Super fabulosus.
Great. I am going to choose to believe you. With us today, we have a very special guest. Dan, introduce yourself to the kids at home.
I'm Dan Larson from Secret Galaxy, formerly Toy Galaxy, your source for all the other stuff that you're talking about, you know, pop culture analysis, media criticism, all that kind of stuff. Talk a lot of cartoons, comics, toys, anything that touches that pop culture sort of history realm. We'll if we haven't gotten to it, we'll get to it. It's on the list.
Dan, exactly. It's on the list. We will get to it. Dan, I'm so thankful for you joining us today. I'm a big fan of your show, and I've been wanting to have this conversation. I wanted to do this episode for a while, and I've wanted you to be a part of this conversation for a while. So I'm glad to get into it. But before we do, a little bit of business up top. Of course, if you want to listen to this show ad-free, if you want to watch it live, if you want to check out Patreon-exclusive shows like Spider-Versity, which I do with Sal from Comic Pop, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please give us a 5-star review. It is very helpful. And if you listen on Spotify every week, we ask you a question. Last week's question was, have you ever performed in live theater? The options were, it was a poll. Yes, no, not on stage, but behind the scenes, as in you're doing the lights or whatever. So, Roxy, our audience, what do you think the percentages were that did live theater?
You know, it was such a high percentage of people who had tried stand-up.
Yes.
And I feel like more people have done live theater than stand-up.
You would think that.
I'm wrong?
You would think that. You know, listen, we have different guests on, demographics change. Here's how it broke down. So yes was 14%. Not on stage, but behind the scenes was also 14%. No was a resounding 71%.
No way, DJ. So more of our audience does stand up than live theater. Y'all are ballsy.
So
that's intense.
I know the answer to this question for Roxy. Roxy, of course, has done live theater. Dan, have you ever done live theater? Have you ever been on stage?
No. The very thought of it was absolutely terrifying until just very, very recently. And I still haven't actually taken that plunge yet. I've done things that are similar to it, you know, live hosting, panels, you know, at big conventions, that sort of thing, but never actual live performance.
Yeah.
This is a real story that I want to tell you guys in the next 30 seconds. The biggest trauma when I think about my childhood, one of the moments that stands out is this time that I was on stage at camp. I went to a theater camp and I'm on stage. I'm in fourth grade. I get on stage and I'm singing this song, Poor Sweet Baby. And in the middle of it, I freeze. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the camp is in front of me. I freeze. I don't remember the lyrics. I look out and the guy next to me starts singing and nudges me. Okay, I've told this story 1,000 times before. It's like really brought me nightmares at night.
Yeah.
All my family is like, I'm sure that didn't happen. I'm sure that wasn't that bad. Guess where I went this past month? I went to Boston. Guess what I did? I looked at all of our home videos. Guess what I found? Mm-hmm. An actual copy with that moment in it. Uh-huh. And I watched it 4,000 times on repeat. It's worse than I remember.
Yeah.
I actually can't. When I think about that, sorry, Dan, you just said you're thinking about stepping into live theater.
Yeah.
It was the most traumatizing, just forgetting you have nobody, you have nothing. Whew. Horrible.
Okay. Well, but here, the positive of that, trying to find the silver lining to that cloud.
I never forgot my lines ever again.
Oh, not just that. I assume, you know, because I am a worrier. It's something I'm very good at. And when the worst happens, then you're like, well, I get the worst has happened. It won't ever be as bad as that one time. And I survived that. So
that's like what you say during an apocalypse.
Yeah.
I don't know that forgetting your lyrics on stage means that that will never happen again.
But you survived it and you're thriving.
I didn't.
Okay, you were still there. We're figments of your imagination. You're still frozen in that moment, and you've imagined the rest of your life playing out to this moment.
I'm going to send it to you, DJ.
Please, you should post it. You should post it on YouTube.
I will post it. It was truly as bad as I remember, where I'm just singing, I'm belting, and then I go around to the other side, and you just see it on my face.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
I wonder how much of that is psychological. I had a girlfriend in college who, she was convinced, she had to go get her wisdom teeth taken out.
Yeah.
And somehow she had gotten convinced ahead of time that she was going to wake up during the surgery. They were going to use all the, put her to sleep, you know, do all the stuff. And she was going to wake up during the surgery. And everybody was like, you're crazy. The drugs are fine. You're not going to do it. She woke up in the surgery. And I wonder how much of that is you programmed yourself to do it.
Yeah.
She woke up while they were doing the surgery and they were like, okay, well, we're going to hit you with the gas again.
Yeah. It's your body's like, well, you were telling me to do this for leading up to this. So I just assumed this is what we're doing.
But how do you not obsess over forgetting your lyrics, you know, before you have to go up on stage? And that's the fear that everybody has.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Oh my God. Well, do you all worry for future? Cause I mean, we're in a range. There's a spectrum of ages here, but do you all worry for like the kids growing up with smartphones? Because a lot of my worst, most embarrassing experiences weren't posted on social media, and now, for as far as anybody knows, never happened. And there's I've seen videos of kids doing stupid things. It's like, that's forever now. It's going to be a part of their lives forever.
That's the stupid things and more the like extremely harmful, horrible things that you do as a kid that you just like, thank gosh, nobody ever saw me egg that house or whatever horrible, stupid, like just that stuff. Now that's out there. And it was popular. It was coming up when I was applying for colleges, right? Yeah. Like what was on your Facebook wall?
Okay.
What they could see, stuff like that. So, but yeah, DJ, I'm definitely worried for the kids are not all right.
Yeah.
The kids are not.
They don't know. They don't know. They're just recording all this stuff they're doing. Like, don't do that, actually. Maybe don't do that.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Dan, before we get into news, you just hosted Hasbro PulseCon, a week ago, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, roughly 2 weeks ago.
Two weeks ago
today, actually, yeah.
So for those that don't know, what is Hasbro PulseCon?
PulseCon grew out of the pandemic. You know, before PulseCon, before the pandemic happened, any of these kinds of events would have been in-person events. This would have been part of Toy Fair. It would have been part of San Diego Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, any of these sort of bigger in-person shows where marketing for all these companies, Hasbro, Mattel, whatever, have the opportunity to showcase their new stuff that's coming up.
Yeah.
Show you the things you're going to pre-order 6 months from now, you get a year and a half from now. And then when the pandemic happened, and this happened across businesses, not just for toys and collectibles and stuff, but everybody sort of took on, I mean, I don't know how old your show is. I don't know if this show predates the pandemic, but a lot of shows were born during the pandemic because what else are you going to do? You know, it's the only way to reach your audience. And that was what PulseCon became, was they started doing their own weekly events, their own monthly events, and then their own sort of big showcase events. And Hasbro Pulse is the sort of fan focused, collector focused part of their general brand. And so PulseCon really focuses on those Transformers, G.I. Joe, Marvel Legends, those key brands.
This is the stuff I don't know as much about, so forgive me, but why Pulse?
That's a question for Hasbro.
Yeah, because that's the name
Pulse
of their...
Pulse doesn't mean something in the toy community.
It's their online...
No, I think it's just a marketing buzzword. They've got, you know, they're on the pulse of collectors. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it's that simple.
Was it your first time hosting it?
Yes. This is the first time they've had... last year, Thew Adams, who was my co-host on PulseCon this year, he did the pre-show last year. There was like a little 20-30-minute pre-show, and then they handed it off to... I don't remember what the actor's name was who actually hosted it, but he's a professional actor, and the focus was more on that sort of style of presentation, trying to cater the show to a wider audience that would be expecting more familiar names. And this year, they kind of looked at it and said, why don't we just speak directly to the customer and bring in members of that community?
Yeah.
And so they asked Thew and I to come in and co-host it.
That's awesome. Were there any like major highlights, like stuff I should be looking out for?
As far as the toys and stuff are concerned,
yeah.
There's lots of cool stuff. Yeah. That was the whole point of it. You know, I wanted to take pictures and send them to all my friends, you know, in the days before the thing actually aired. But you know, we were on a NDA and talk about those things. So yeah, no, there's lots of cool
stuff. When you were done, were you able to?
You're a big comics guy, so if you know Kristar, they're sort of the Hasbro's digging into some of their sort of archive stuff and saying, what do we own that we can make some money off of, we can take advantage of, that we've never actually utilized in the last, you know, 30, 40 years.
The Kristar thing was wild for me because that's one of those that's like ROM, that it's like, wait, so Marvel does own it. Like okay, it is theirs now.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, it always was theirs. Kristar is a really rare thing where Marvel had their sort of deals with Hasbro at the time. And so Hasbro creates G.I. Joe and says, we've got these toys, we need a mythology.
Yeah.
So they go to Marvel and Marvel creates the mythology. And that's the same thing that happened with Transformers and a lot of the these other toy brands. Kristar is Hasbro saying, let's just do our own in-house thing. There's no cartoon associated with it. We're going to create some toys. Marvel's going to do the mythology. And that's just what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And that's what exists.
Yeah.
Are you a big collector?
Am I? Yes, very much so.
Yep. What do you collect?
Action figures. Lots of stuff.
Did you get anything?
When like the presentation was over, did you like sneak anything in your bag? Oh no.
I tried to steal the Kristar. I tried to steal that action figure, but they had everything pretty much on lockdown. They had everything, you know, marked and numbered and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to get anybody in trouble. You know, I didn't want to jeopardize the possibility that I could go back and host again next year.
100%. 100%. I get it.
But they gave me tons of stuff. So
worth it. So going in, before we get into our main topic for today is we're going to be talking about IPs and studios' reliance on IPs and stuff like that. But before we do that, a little bit of news. Not as exciting as I was secretly hoping, fingers crossed, that maybe we'd get a SAG deal this week. Apparently that was overly ambitious on my part. I was reading a Deadline article where somebody, an insider, was like, yeah, it'll probably be 3 to 4 weeks. I'm like, 3 to 4 weeks? Why? It's already been long enough. But Wednesday, they put out a joint statement, SAG-AFTRA and the AMPTP, whatever.
AMPTP, bro, you've got this. Sure. I believe in you.
They met for a full day of bargaining sessions and have concluded negotiations will continue Friday, October 6th. That's today as of this recording, with parties working internally over the weekend, resuming Monday, October 9th. A different insider said, this is senior people sitting down together and the deliberations are going well. Everyone is conducting themselves calmly, which feels weird that you need to specify that. So, Roxy, how are you feeling about all this?
I was one of the people who was like, you guys are jumping the gun on this. This is going to take weeks. And everybody was like, this is going to be done super soon. But the thing is that even if we're giving everybody the benefit of the doubt, there's still a lot of nuances. Like if you look what the actors are asking for, it's a 12-page document of things that like really need to be finessed. And unless the AMPTP is going to say, we'll give you everything, they're going over every single point. So it's the things like, okay, what is the turnaround time for your audition to be turned in, right?
Yeah.
Like 24 hours. No, we want 48 hours. How about 36 hours? It's all those conversations that I'm sure are taking a long time already.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, when people are like, why don't we just do for SAG what we did for the WGA with AI? It's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how SAG and or how actors would be replaced or use AI versus how the writers would are different. So they need different verbiage, and coming up with that, the studios are going to be extremely precious about, because that right now, you know how far apart they are, where the studios are like, you come in for one day, we own your likeness forever and don't pay you a dollar.
Yeah,
That is very far apart from what SAG is asking for, which is a living wage. Those are two completely on the opposite ends of the spectrum things. So I never thought this would be a couple of days, but 5 weeks feels like a fucking long time, especially because of how this industry works. Obviously, production shut down for all of December, if not for most of November, because Thanksgiving and December, Hollywood is like closed for the last 2 months of the year.
Yeah.
So I think that this is very strategic on the AMPTP's part, where they're like, we're going to squeeze two more months out of not paying people by making sure that we close this end of October so productions don't start back up. So see y'all in January, February. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I thought they were going to do that the whole time, but now watching them do that is so irritating.
Yeah, we're gonna finish it up just in enough time for Jason Momoa to promote Aquaman.
Yep.
But not in enough time to maybe shoot anything. Maybe squeeze in one last Aquaman reshoot. We'll see. Listen, we'll see how we feel. Dan, a lot of the stuff you cover is from a while ago. Has the strike impacted you at all?
Not really. No, we've tried to be very careful. I'm not a member of any union. I wish I could be. I have union envy right now.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, there's no writers union I can join. There's no actors union. There's no directors. There's no YouTube producers union.
Yes.
But I honestly, you know, as far as my own personal beliefs are concerned, everybody should be in a union. Everybody right now. I wish. I was really hoping that this, you know, the writer's strike was just going to kick off, and it. It has to a certain degree kicked off this sort of wave of, you know, strikes across the country in different professions, you know, not just in entertainment. But I want to see that happen everywhere for everybody all the time. Like, just labor, take your power back. So while it hasn't necessarily impacted us directly, I've tried to be very careful about how we conduct our show and making sure that we aren't in any way treading too closely to, you know, am I jeopardizing my potential membership of the writers union in the future, jeopardizing my potential, you know, of any of these unions. Same with Greg, you know, he would love to be in the Directors Guild someday. You know, are we getting too close to any of this stuff? So I have enough contacts, enough friends, enough people who are in these unions who I've sort of reached out to and said, hey, I'm thinking about hosting PulseCon. Is there any kind of conflict? I don't know about how any of this stuff works. And so it hasn't affected our production, but we've wanted to make sure we've cleared everything and been careful.
Yeah, 100%. And I do think, and I don't know, I'm unfortunately not informed enough to know how this would work, but watching all this go on, there's been moments where it's like, yeah, it'd be nice if YouTube creators had a union so that some of that stuff was clear, because especially once SAG went on strike, where it was like, you know, our SAG members can't do this. And also maybe non-SAG members, like what does that mean? We'll see. And so if we had our own union to be like, well, no, these are our, you know, protecting our interests, I think some of that stuff would be clearer.
Especially DJ, because of how non-transparent YouTube actually is. And I understand that's a platform that all of us are on, but the fact that they say they take around 30% of your revenue, and year after year, they take 50% of my revenue, and that is not close to 30%.
Yeah.
And they're just allowed to do that. And when you question them or try to reach somebody, it's like, find another platform.
Yeah.
And that is crazy.
And I've thought about posting the show on E-Bombs World, but you know, it's just not gonna
it feels like that should be illegal, but what do I do?
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's nobody to go to. And I do think not just YouTube, but this space in general, it's the hosting space, the digital space that doesn't have a union. And hopefully they will at some point, as we're seeing with the Marvel VFX people come into the union, or as we're seeing now with SAG passing the authority to have gaming strikes. Like, there's all different movement that I feel like is leading towards the YouTubers rising up.
Yeah.
But it is tough, Dan. It is very annoying and frustrating, where it's like, what is the next step of that? Is it just have to be one of us that's like, I am going to start a union. Who wants to join? Mm-hmm. Like, what even... How is the union?
Which of us is excited to fill out paperwork the most?
Right. Yeah. Like, that's a full-time job. And like, you know, it's already hard out here. So,
well, listen, by the time we're done with this conversation, we'll get it started. We'll get it started during this video. And by the end, we'll have our petition ready to go. Scooch on over to our main topic for this week. I think it's been, speaking of the strikes and all that stuff, I feel like this has been, there's been a lot of pushback on studios and a lot of discussion around the way the industry has changed, the way the output of industry has changed. And I think part of that conversation has been IP. And obviously it's a big part of all of our, from one degree or another, it's kind of our gig. We talk about some of the biggest brands out there, Star Wars, Marvel, yada, yada, yada. So, Dan, you in particular, for those that aren't familiar, the link's in the description to go check out Secret Galaxy. I highly recommend it. You do videos that are pretty comprehensive histories of some of these characters and brands that we all love. Having done that for as long as you've done that, do you have like a unifying theory of everything when it comes to like IPs and brands of like, this is how they work? You see it all. You see the entire history of it all.
I mean, there's a whole lot of, you know, copy paste and repetition, and it's a pretty well worn playbook at this point. The reality is just that it's safe and it's easy.
Yeah.
It's proven. And you know, the thing that the Marvel Cinematic Universe and things like that really broke open was that, you know, if you have an audience on this character, then you have them on all these other characters, and all of this stuff already exists, and you just don't even have to do that much work to make it, you know, happen.
Yeah.
And it's been very weird, you know, this generation that grew up in the 80s. It's been this weird almost social experiment of, you know, the amount of these brands that we were exposed to very, very young that have become legacy brands and just refuse to go away.
Yeah.
Partially because we're asking for it, but partially because they just won't stop putting it out there, you know, that it just suffocates the market for anything else.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to see how this is sort of dragged on and tried to predict where it might go in the future.
That's another thing that, because I think we talked about this a little bit of this kind of when we're talking about like how much of it is a self-fulfilled prophecy, how much of it is this is what people want, this is what we grew up with, we want that familiarity, and how much of the studios going, well, we already kind of know how to do a Batman, so let's do a couple of new Batmans.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's always going to be safer than taking a risk on, you know, a Peacemaker.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to find something new and turn into something as big as a character like Batman, you know.
That's also still an IP.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, at some point, what are the risks ranked A, B, and C, right?
Like how big a risk is Barbie? Technically, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Because people are talking about it like it's a huge, huge risk. And I'm like, huh.
Yeah.
You know what's a big risk? Everything Everywhere All at Once. That was a risk.
Oh, for sure.
And a risk that paid off. But like anything that comes from Marvel, DC, Star Wars, Star Trek, Harry Potter, Mattel, which obviously is different than those other things, but still a proven property, like I just don't know that you can attach the word risk to any of that stuff. What is the most right now? Is there anything that is gonna be that's newer that's gonna be like those big IPs, those big Marvels that I'm speaking about in 20 years? Like, are we providing anything now that's gonna be the behemoth in the future? We're just gonna keep barreling through with those.
You know, I really don't know, because the market is so much more saturated at this point with so many different, you know, the part of the reason that those brands succeeded the way they did at the time and still today is because you had the entire community in one place, right? Mm-hmm. Some TV, you know, broadcast regions only had two or three channels. Yeah. So you didn't have a lot of options. If you were going to consume any kind of media in the afternoon after school, there was like two shows you could watch, you know? So everybody was watching the same thing. And so everybody had that shared experience of those same things. Now, these kids today, mm-hmm. I don't know what they're watching. I don't know what the most popular thing is. Is it YouTube? Is it TikTok? Is it Nickelodeon? Is it the regular broadcast television? The audience is broken up. I have, you know, a niece and two nephews that are 14, 16, and 18 years old. And the three of them don't even like the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard to predict what is going to be the thing. Now, I can tell you that there are movies that have come out recently that they have all three fallen in love with. But those were legacy brands from 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, is this just going to keep self-perpetuating into the future while we just keep reinventing things, you know, or is something actually going to break through and be new? I don't know. Maybe Harry Potter was the last thing that did that scale.
Yeah. That which is what, over 20 years ago now?
It's been a while.
It's been well,
because Harry Potter, because it comes from the books. Like, it would it have been as big of a property if it didn't? Like, is that why? So. Is it the Hunger Game books, the Maze Runner books, the Harry Potter books, the Divergent books? Is that why those have been larger than any of the other YA or like family friendly things that have been out there?
Yeah, I think that was a phenomenon. I think those books really caught on across across demographics. You know, kids were reading them, adults were reading them, everybody was reading them. So that was a built-in audience before that movie series even launched. And then to have those books continuing to be written as the movies were being made, just really, really supercharged that entire franchise. Lord of the Rings would have been a sort of different thing where the books already had legacy, you know, popularity, and people had been dreaming about the real big screen, you know, because this, you know, our culture, we still see movies as the highest form of art, right? It's not TV, it's not comics, it's always going to be movies. If a comic book is super successful, it's like, when's the movie going to be made? If a video game is super successful, when's the movie going to be made? And I think Lord of the Rings hit that same sort of spot where it was like, yes, the books have been popular for 60 years or whatever it is, but you know, the movies are really where it's going to shine and transcend as part of pop culture. And it did. I would also put The Matrix in there too, the Matrix series.
Yeah, The Matrix, which again, 20 years ago. And truthfully, when I think it kind of creates this pattern. I remember I was listening to a podcast. They were talking about American Psycho. And that book came out in the 80s, was set in the 80s. But by the time they made the movie, it was the 2000s. And they just decided like, okay, it's the language was, this is going to be a period piece because it's in the 80s. And you think about how much culture had changed from 1980 to 2000. And then by the time they were talking about it, it was 20 plus, whatever. So been another 20 years, but culture has not shifted as much from 2000 to 2020. And so I feel like we're talking about it within the space that we're most familiar with, movies, TV shows, comic books, that sort of thing. But across the board, it feels like American culture has just kind of stopped. Obviously, there's been advancements in technology and everything, but the way our culture, you think from 60, you know, the difference between the 50s and the 60s and the 60s and the 70s and the 70s and 80s and like 2000, 2020, it's like not much has changed.
No, it is. Go ahead.
What are you talking about, DJ?
What do you mean?
What do you mean not much has changed between 2000 and 2020? We went through an effing pandemic. From 2000 to 2023, we went through 9/11. We went through a pandemic. Yeah. We've gone through several strikes. I mean, the landscape is completely different. Fashion is completely different. The sound of music is completely different. Not the sound of music as in the musical, the literal sound of music. I mean, I think that we are nowhere close to what we were at in 2000.
I feel like you could shoot a movie set in 2000 and you wouldn't have to change much, whereas if you're shooting a movie in 2000 set in 1980, it's a completely different paradigm.
I would argue that society has shifted, but the pop culture has not.
Yeah.
And it is weird. It's always weird to me, you know, because we really live in our channel. We live in, you know, basically 1977 through 1997.
Like, yeah.
We really don't venture outside that 20-year period very much. And it's always weird to me when I think like, oh, man, you know, we're talking about this thing that was released in 1982, 1983. 40 years later, we're still talking about that. If I was a 10-year-old kid in 1986 and you were trying to sell me on characters that my parents had grown up with in the 40s, I would not have been interested at all. And so I don't know how these brands are continuing to connect with these kids today. It's 40 years old.
Yeah.
You know, well, like, let them have their own thing. But it doesn't seem like anything is actually breaking through because everything is so dominated by these 40-year-old brands.
What about like Star Trek, TOS, right? I feel like that's the 60s.
Yeah.
And that was super interesting to me as a kid. I think that there were some properties, but also television and movies were relatively new for that generation. For, you know, when I talk to my grandparents about what things they were watching on the television, it's like, of course that doesn't always interest me because they were still like putting stick figures on effing TV. You know, they were still figuring it all out. Some of their movies interest me, right? Like some of these most famous Wizard of Oz, Citizen Kane, whatever, of all time. Of course, those interest us because they are done on such a grand scale and there will never be movies like that again. But their television, no, it doesn't. But I do think that you would have been interested as a kid if there was a good property that's, well, not that I know Little Dan, but I would think most people would be interested if the property was good.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely things like that. Tarzan is a brand you can go back, a character you can track back to Edgar Rice Burroughs' novel. Sherlock Holmes is one that's always been out there. James Bond certainly has been, you know, across generations at this point, at least four generations of, you know, TV and movie viewers and book readers, for sure. But the stuff that was actually, you know, that I was interested in as a kid, Masters of the Universe, G.I. Joe, Transformers, you know, that was all brand new, cutting edge stuff that I was connecting with because of the way that the media landscape had changed.
Yeah.
The media landscape had changed where cartoons were being made specifically to promote these things to that age group to go out and buy them.
Don't you think we're doing that now, though, with social media? Isn't that the biggest difference between 2000 and 2023? Is like, we don't get it because we're old as fuck. Like, they get it. The TikTok stuff. You know, I watch every week when I'm watching Shark Tank, which, as DJ knows, has become my obsession. All the time, they're like, these products come out and they're like, well, have you started to figure out how to promote this on TikTok? And I laugh to myself, like, would that really work? And then I go look at their TikTok and it's got like 15 million views on a video. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, if a show is doing well now, it's getting 1 million views, you know, it's much shorter, but that is the change of the landscape. They just released, what the F was the movie? Mean Girls. Did you guys see that they just released Mean Girls on TikTok in 23 parts?
Yeah. Good way to
saw that.
Not have to pay residuals. Not have to pay residuals to your actors. Good job.
Yeah. Bring in the strike. That's effed up. Make sure as you guys are negotiating at the table that you include something about social, because that wasn't even a problem that I thought we were gonna have. Yeah. But the point being that we don't, just because like that isn't working for us, that's working for a whole gen. I guarantee you that is how a lot of people watch that movie for the first time.
Yeah.
That's a wild child.
But I think to Dan's point, Roxy, you bring up Star Trek. And I think another example is something like G.I. Joe that existed prior to the 80s. But both of those brands had to go through massive revamps. You know, like Star Trek TOS is not Star Trek The Next Generation. Some of the principles are the same. And now, what has Star Trek done now? It's like, well, what if we went back to the TOS era a third time? Like, what if we, it's Pike this time, which I like Strange New Worlds. I'm not dogging Strange New Worlds, but we're kind of the idea. And truthfully, I think that's been something that was to Star Trek's benefit that they forgot about, is that they could do different things. Whereas, you know, if you're doing a Star Wars and there's not a Skywalker in there, good luck. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
But like
one of the things you're seeing right now is this attempt, and it's been happening for the last 20 years, as those 80s generation brands sort of needed to be refreshed and rebooted, and those kids who are now adults were asking for it. They wanted to buy stuff. You start to see these attempts to make these IPs fit both demographics, right? Yeah. So Star Trek, your example just now, what they're doing right now is there's so many different kinds of Star Trek available that if you're a fan of the original series, you have that access. If you're a fan of the Next Generation crew, you have that access. If you would rather watch an animated series, you have that as well.
Yeah.
There's lots of different ways that they're trying to reach different audiences while maintaining that legacy brand.
You guys are sticking for the most part, and me too, in this conversation talking about fantasy sci-fi, right? But I do think that there are a lot of different interesting situations taking place, especially in horror, where they're not necessarily connected to that initial IP. I mean, there are things like The Shining, of course, or whatever, that are connected to a lot of different books, or there are big franchises that have been going on for a long time that are coming back, the Halloweens, the Screams of the world, all of that.
Sure.
But I do think that they have done a better job of figuring out whatever that breakthrough is of like new, different, hit them with something else, make our own new legacy properties that hopefully will have sequels in 30 years. I don't mean hopefully as in I want sequels, that they're hoping have sequels in 30 years. And I wonder why the fantasy sci-fi space feels to be just like cycling backwards and backwards and backwards. And the horror space, and I'm sure if we go through comedies, other genres, those spaces seem to be able to find new things to move forward with.
Well, I think with horror, it's because it's cheap. It's like, here's $10, make me a movie that'll make me $1 million. Like, they're not betting. You're not making a $300 million horror movie, which allows them, you know, that you mentioned Everything Everywhere All at Once, that was made for $25 million, which for all of us is quite a significant sum of money. But as far as movies go, especially a movie of that scale, is really impressive. So I think this does come into, obviously, as we've talked about, the nuance of this, Deadpool is an IP, but it wasn't as well known an IP before the movie. But that was the rare occurrence of a mid-budget superhero film. And so I think part of that conversation is maybe the studio's opening up to the idea of maybe not betting the entire farm on one tentpole production. Like, I've seen a lot of buzz for the Hulu film No One Will Save You, which in my opinion is not very good, but I think part of the reason it's getting a lot of buzz is it's one of the few examples of, like, I saw somebody describe it as like a puddle of water in the middle of the desert. Like, oh, it's not a big brand, you know what I mean? It's a mid-budget movie. And so, like, maybe that if we allowed for more mid-budget movies, it would allow for us to recycle less ideas, and also might bring back, like, Roxy brought up comedy, and it's like, as far as theatrical release, as far as I understand, comedies are, like, dead. Like, they're, you know, like, that was a big thing with Bros. When that came out, it was, like, dead on arrival, and just because that's not, studios don't like promoting them and putting them in theaters. They'd rather send it straight to streaming.
Well, what would you think.
What would you call the most recent Mattel movie? A comedy or no?
The Barbie, but again, big IP. That's different than something like Bros.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But just I don't think comedy is dead. I think that people think comedy is dead, and then they're not doing the comedies. But like that Jennifer Lawrence movie just did pretty well.
Yeah.
But I definitely hear what you're saying. Sorry, Dan. Go ahead.
No, I think you brought up a great point about horror, and horror I think is unique right now in the marketplace. And I would credit that to the fans of horror and to what the fans are asking to consume and are willing to consume as films. There is a much more innovative and vibrant community around supporting much, much, much smaller horror films out there right now. Yeah. Is that intrinsic to the genre? You know, so much of the classic horror movies, like you said, DJ, mm-hmm. were made with much, much smaller budgets. And in many cases, as I understand it, a lot of directors got into horror because they just wanted to make movies.
Yeah.
And horror was easily accessible, it was affordable, and so they started making horror movies. And I think the audience that exists right now wants to watch just innovative, interesting, new takes, new characters, new concepts for horror that the science fiction audience isn't necessarily, or the mass audience, I should say, isn't necessarily asking for or demanding.
Yeah, it's a good point. As DJ knows, because he had the director of the movie that I was just in Crust, which got a SAG interim agreement, so I can talk about it freely, which is very cool and nice to not feel like my hands are being tied. But when we were promoting that and they were getting crowdfunding, they like so far past where what they wanted to do, because I think that that horror community is just the, for lack of better words, the fucking coolest.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I don't know how the other fandoms can do what the horror fans do, but for some reason, it's like, unlike the Star Wars fans who just, as much as I love Star Wars, it's so toxic and it's so frustrating to have any conversations. Like, never am I at any of the horror cons or screenings and hearing like the bah, 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 but what if, and they're all so cool. And if you don't like something, they're like, that's cool, I love that one. There's something about that fandom. I don't know whether it's because they like spooky shit, so mm-hmm. that's like, who knows why, but they are just so much cooler. I wish everybody could be a horror fan.
Yeah, I think it there's more of an appreciation for the genre as opposed to the specific IPs or the specific characters. It's like they like horror.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of horror that can fall into that, comedy, drama, science fiction, whatever. Whereas, you know, the sort of when you start talking about superheroes, it's like, well, what's available? Marvel or DC? That's all you've got. You're not going to get anything else, you know? And that's what the fans are asking for. I want a better Superman. I want a different Batman, you know?
Yeah. And that's interesting too, because going off what you were talking about with horror, Roxy, and something you mentioned earlier, Dan, do you think... what's the word? We're so broken up. You know what I mean? Because a lot, like you mentioned, like a lot of this stuff was, especially when we were younger, even before that, you had limited options. So we were all kind of, the idea of the water cooler show or whatever, obviously, it's the, or the playground show, depending on the age we're talking about. Is that, obviously it's not entirely gone, but is it? Like, is it, do we, is everything so, we talk about horror that's so, that can be so siloed off. Are we all, and the way you were talking about Star Trek, the way it specifically speaks to fans of individual things, individual components of that brand. Are we kind of past the days where, like, we have a few central things that we're all kind of, like, on board for?
Yeah, DJ, absolutely. You know, another franchise that has a SAG interim agreement right now, which is wild to me and I don't understand it, but it's The Walking Dead. And I watched 14 mother effing seasons of The Walking Dead, yeah. Right? So, like, you would think that if we're talking about water cooler conversations, that was one of the biggest properties that there was in the last 14 years, that The Walking Dead was up there with some of the biggest shows ever.
Yeah.
But not only could I not find one effing person to talk to that show about, yeah. But now there's an entire show about Daryl.
Yeah. There's like six new Walking Dead shows
that I'm not even watching.
Yeah.
And I was a diehard Walking Dead person.
Yeah.
So I think it is very difficult because not only did you have to watch all 14 seasons in order to watch this spinoff, theoretically, but then they lose you at some point. So, and that's if you already were a Walking Dead fan. So how am I supposed to have a water cooler conversation with somebody who has a family and a life? And I'm like, yeah, but did you see episode 400 of The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Did you catch it? No.
No,
all right, all dude. Right. Like, yeah.
So I think that speaks to the risk that is on both sides of a production. There's the mitigation of the risk from the production side that doesn't want to spend a bunch of money, that's not going to make a bunch of money. Like, they'll spend hundreds of million dollars if they think they can make billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So it's all about, you know, minimizing that degree of risk. But the other phenomenon that seems to have occurred in, I would say, the last 20 years, as media and narrative gets shorter and shorter and shorter, I think there's a mitigation of risk on the viewer's end, where there's so much out there to consume. There's so many shows and so many movies and stuff that people don't want to take a risk and spend the time to watch something that they don't know that they're already going to love.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So Star Wars, it becomes like, well, I already like Star Wars and I already know these characters and I've already invested so much time in it. So it's no risk to watch the next show as opposed to trying something new.
Yeah.
The equal part to that, Dan, I think, because that's a great point, is that also, if you want to continue to be a Marvel fan, you cannot miss a season of their show or you will be fucking confused during their movies. And they've made it so that you have to watch all of their properties if you are a fan of theirs, because all of a sudden, same thing with Star Wars, same thing with DC. All of a sudden, you'll be watching one of their big movies, and if you missed a season three of one of their side characters' shows, you do not know that a character is dead.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, what?
Yeah, what happened?
A couple is together or whatever it is.
And also to continue that with that thought, there's also a lot more pressure put on the audience members where if like, okay, you didn't watch season one of this new Netflix show through its entirety three times on opening weekend, too bad, it's canceled now. Hopefully it gets picked up by another network. Sorry, my dog's wilding out. And which makes it more like, because I know, speaking of Walking Dead, AMC Plus had two shows last year, I think, Moonhaven and Pantheon, that were amazing. And not only Pantheon has a season two, they've shot it. It's done. I don't know if I'll ever get to see it. It was canceled and thrown into a vault somewhere. So is that worth my time and energy to get invested in a thing that now I will never know how it finishes?
Yeah, that is frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you are right that the risk on the viewer's part jumping into something that isn't already attached to an IP means that it might get canceled. You might never see it. You might have nobody to talk to about it. It's not going to be relevant to whatever franchise that you love. And TV is time consuming. I mean, it is very time consuming. As somebody, I just hit my 100th show of the year, a big TV watcher, binger. For you guys who follow me, you know I'm a lover of love, a shipper of ships, a TV expert. This is my jam. And it is really hard to keep up with stuff to the point where I haven't watched the most recent Star Wars property because I'm too busy watching my 50 Netflix dating shows that I can't get off of.
No.
Like, and I will get there because if I do not watch the most recent Star Wars property, then every time I say that I like Star Wars, what somebody says to me is, what did you think of Ahsoka?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I haven't seen it yet. And they're like, not a Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry that I didn't watch it the week that it came out. Did you guys watch the 50 other shows that I watched that week? No. Back off.
So we got
a personal problem.
We got a question from the Discord from Mike Joyce. Do you see Hollywood's obsession with big IP ending anytime soon? What do you think, Dan? Do you think this will be anywhere on the horizon for us?
I really don't. The way that the my understanding, I don't have any sort of inside knowledge of anything. I only go by what I read online and, yeah. and what people tell me, is that the way the dollars sort of works now and the way studios are constructed now and the way profits are expected now, again, we're locked into as low risk as possible, as high return as possible. Like you were just saying previously, both of you, you know, where are the mid movies, the mid budget movies, the smaller budget movies that, you know, studios can take a risk on? There's no such thing as a wide release, you know, $25, $30 million budget movie anymore. It's just not a thing anymore. And part of that is the pandemic. Part of that is the IPs themselves. But I don't know what it would take to change that. And I just don't. I don't see it happening anytime soon. I think streaming is the haven for those kinds of things now.
Yeah, streaming or A24. Roxy, what about you? Do you think the strikes will have any positive impact on this? Like, I guess it may be changing the culture and changing maybe transparency and changing the way money is.
One of the things I've been thinking about is I do think that with the writers' strike, with their big win in the AI area, is that the thing that probably would be easiest for AI to write scripts for are these big IPs, mm-hmm. because they have so much IP, so yeah. they have so much to like dig through. So I do think that the strikes are going to affect that, because we are going to continue to get more original stories in the worlds of Star Wars and DC and Marvel than we would have had they been like, okay, Star Wars episode 50 written by AI, mm-hmm. Jared. I think that would be absolute trash and not art. And so I think that in that way, the strikes are positively affecting the kinds of IP that we see, because all three of us, I'm assuming, Dan, based on what I've heard about you so far, it's like, I love these franchises. It's not like I'm sitting here being like, I don't want any more of these franchises. I really do love them. I just love when they're a little different, a little unique. And the last thing I want is an entire phase 6 of Marvel written by AI.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of what made these legacy brands so popular initially and allowed them to come back or made people demand that they come back was that they ended. Mm-hmm. Star Wars ended in 1986. It was done. Yeah. As far as we were concerned, we might never have seen another frame of a Star Wars thing for the rest of our lives. And that made it precious. You know, there was always that Star Trek versus Star Wars debate. Which one's better? Which one you prefer? Star Trek always had more stuff. The original mm-hmm. series, there were more episodes. There were more stories that had been told. But the original series ended.
Yeah.
There were stopping points for this stuff where you could take a break and breathe and see other things and watch other stuff. And now it's like, yes, if you are a Star Wars fan of any degree, of course you want to watch the next thing. Of course you want to know what's going on, but you can only give it so much of your time. Take a break, please.
Yeah, I think Dan and I were talking a little bit about this before we went on air. We're all in the same space. We're all talking about this stuff. We all love this stuff. And of course I got into this because I love all this stuff, but I don't want it to be the only game in town. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, because like Dan was pointing out, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, to go on the other end, if you've been reading the comics, that was exciting because you always dreamed of something like that, this interconnected live action movies. And it had never been realized and was being realized, and it felt like a miracle. And now, you know, Roxy, to your point, you were kind of like, you have to watch all of them to get it. I would argue, having seen the first four episodes of Loki, that at this point, even if you watch all of them, I don't know that it makes sense. Like, I don't know what we're doing with the multiverse. I'm not entirely convinced they know.
And there's so much stuff that it's like, does each little, as each piece becomes smaller, yeah, as, you know, proportionate to the whole, does it even matter? You know, does one episode of Loki actually shift or change or do anything to the narrative other than put those pictures of those people in front of your eyeballs again?
Well, and even to that point, does it need to? Because as somebody that enjoys superhero comics, I pick up characters I like. Mostly I follow creators I like, you know what I mean? Like, and so, you know, like, I'm not going to pick up the biggest event, because events normally aren't very good. Event comics aren't that great. So, you know, I'm following creators, I'm following stories, I'm following stuff like that. And which is, I feel like, the natural progression of this stuff, but also exactly what studios don't want. They want what Roxy was mentioning, where it's like you feel obligated to watch all the things. And it's like, that's not how, I don't pick up every comic Marvel publishes. I pick up like two.
So let me ask you guys this. What is the number one thing you feel like these IPs could do moving forward that would be positive for what it is you guys want to see? I'm not talking specifics like you want to see this storyline in Star Wars. I just mean in general, with the big ones that we're talking about, again, Marvel, DC, Star Wars, Star Trek, Harry Potter, even if you're going through The Matrix, whatever it is. What is it that you feel like overall they could do to have positive forward momentum here?
Dan, I'm gonna go to you first. I'll go first. You first. Yeah. You're the guest. Guest goes first.
No. I was being polite, letting the host go first. for me, it would be to let artists be artists, to let creators create. Yeah. I think the biggest, the most exciting things that have happened with all of those overarching cross promotional cinematic universes and stuff is when you've given the power to people like James Gunn to say, do whatever you want with this, you know, like, just tell interesting stories, make new characters, create new things, take us to worlds we haven't seen before, and innovate on this. And then it's when they start to succeed at that, that you start to get that, oh, we can turn this into a bigger franchise. We can have cartoons and all this other stuff and whatever. And it's like, no, let the artist create what the artist wants to create. And when they're done, even if that means all those characters are dead, then let that be the thing. And I think that would be the most refreshing thing possible for all of this. And then throw in that break. But I know that's not how the economics of it works.
Yeah,
it's like Alan Moore just was channeled through you as you were speaking, I feel.
I totally agree, because I think the best examples I can think of this year of stuff that I thought really excited me was the new TMNT movie. I thought was like a really great refresh of the franchise, reminded me, was unlike what I'd seen before, but reminded me all the things I loved about it. And it was one of those that's like, I'm so excited for like the 8-year-olds that this is their first, this is their TMNT. Yeah. It's like, that's a good one. Cause I've told this to Roxy. I'll tell this to you too. Like, there's a whole generation that to them Transformers is the Michael Bay Transformers.
Yeah.
And that makes me sad. Whereas something like this new TMNT is like, get good. This is a good, if this is your one, you're a kid, this is great. Similar with My Adventures with Superman. Big Superman fan. I think he's my favorite. He's probably my favorite comic book character. And that was such a fresh, unique take on the mythos, stay true to it in the ways that matter, change things that in ways that were interesting. And again, there's a whole, just in my mind, I could picture a whole generation of kids that this is their first Superman. And it's like, that's incredible. Like, this is such a great introduction to the character, and you get to find all the things. But I think to your point, those are situations where creators got to do their own thing. And I just now, because My Adventures with Superman was animated by Studio Mir, who did Legend of Korra. I think another IP that could, you know, stand the test of time is Avatar: The Last Airbender. But again, that was a team of creators that, like, maybe the last got the squeak one through before the doors closed. If we got to make our own thing, our own unique vision was inspired by a bunch of different stuff. But if you let creators across the board, and again, to the question I asked you, Roxy, you know, I hope this is how the strikes benefit things, that this is a creative industry And for lack of a better word, the suits, that's not what they're here for, is the creative part. And you pay the creative people to do the thing, let them do the thing. And sometimes maybe it won't result in all of the money, but sometimes it might. So, you know, what about you, Roxy, to your own question? What would you
like to say? No, I was hoping you wouldn't ask.
Too bad. Too late. I just did.
I think I feel exactly how you guys feel. It's like, it's almost not on them. Mm-hmm. It's almost on us, on consumers, to put our money where our mouth is and support the things that deserve to be supported. Mm-hmm. And the more we support independent projects, the more these big studios will realize that while their IPs are important, their independent projects are equally as important. Yeah. So it's going out for the things like the comedies of the world. You know, there's been several this summer that were actually excellent that fucking bombed.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Yeah.
That's a big bummer. You know, like if you want to see more AAPI centered films, then when they come into theaters, you have to go see them.
Yeah.
And that's like, as much as I'd rather be like, it's on the studios, it is, but they're not going to do anything to change it. We have to. We have to support the other movies. And then hopefully there'll be more of a balance, because that's what I really want to see, is like just more other shit.
Yeah. Well, and I think that goes to Dan's point with the break. You know, maybe it's not a decades long, we don't decades without Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but you know, like other stuff in between it, you know, other new projects.
Yeah. The biggest ones not doing that, I do think, is Marvel. I think that it is such a bummer to be a teenage Marvel fan right now. Like, imagine trying to catch up on these movies, mm-hmm. whose characters are still the characters. That to become a Marvel fan at age 12 right now, mm-hmm. is like a massive task, it's a huge undertaking.
It's like the 90s, being a 90s comic reader all over again.
Just what a bummer.
Yeah.
I was convinced they had a perfect opportunity to reboot that whole universe at the end of Endgame.
Yeah.
Just right. Start over. Just
and that would have been great. What an end game mm-hmm. for them.
Right. Like,
just truly, how cool would that have been? And then new characters, new light, same characters, different people, whatever. Wait, no. 5 years.
Take 5 years off. Yep.
No. Yep.
Obviously they didn't do that. And because they probably didn't think it'd be financially beneficial for them. But I just feel like we came up at the perfect time for those. I saw every single one of the Marvel movies in theaters.
Yeah.
And to catch up on that now, I would just be like, fuck this. That's not my franchise.
Well, it's like you were talking about with Walking Dead. It's like, you want to get in Walking Dead? 15 seasons? Fuck off. That's not happening. Sorry.
15?
I don't know. I just picked a number. It's a lot. That's a lot. So one more question from the Discord. Counterintuitive to everything we've been talking about this whole time. Leonard Kim, is there any IP out there that you would want to see become the next franchise movie show? Dan, I'm going to throw this one to you first. Is there one, because you, like you said, they're on the list, you'll get to them, but you've done some more obscure ones, you've done them all, is there one that you think is ready for prime time, one that's maybe fallen into obscurity but is ready for prime time?
You know, nothing immediately jumps out at me. It all just kind of gets lost in this haze of similarity and sameness and theme and variation, that nothing immediately jumps out as being so unique and innovative right off the top of my head right now, that I would say, man, this is a gem that I wouldn't mind watching another 20 years worth of stuff. That's hard to pick out, and also because I am constantly immersed in 20 and 40 year old things, you know.
Everything you're like, I you're do like, God, is... please give me something new, please.
Yeah, exactly. So it is, you know, as we sort of grew our channel, as we switched from Toy Galaxy to Secret Galaxy, and we started moving into more movies and TV shows and stuff, and got away from 80s cartoons and 80s toys specifically, that was actually pretty refreshing for me, because we got to start to look at other stuff. It's still stuff from 80s and 90s, but at least it's different things that I hadn't talked about a billion times before. I hadn't watched the video we just did comes out next week. I hadn't watched that movie since it came out in 1987 or somewhere in the 90s. I probably watched it. And I watched it twice on Monday and was like, that's really good. I haven't watched anything like that in a long time. That's
yeah. Really, what about refreshing. What about you, Roxy? Is there something you're like, let's brush it off, dust it off, get it ready to go?
Something from the past or something that's current that I think would be stand the test of time?
That's a fantastic point. Is there any IP out there that you would want to see become the next franchise movie or show? Good point. It could be something now that you're like, I want this to be the thing 20 years from now that people care
about. It's the GOT franchise, right? Like that is the one that's current that I think is going to be around for a long time. They immediately pitched 8 shows after that.
Do you think it'll be impacted at all because it's more adult oriented as opposed to a lot of the things we're talking about now that at least a lot of people are introduced to as kids?
I think that that's what they're doing with their 8 shows.
Yeah.
And I'm an adult.
Yeah.
So it's what I want to see. Mm-hmm. So I think that, I think that there is a huge room for that to be the big next thing that people are still talking about in 20 years. And it's so difficult because my favorite movies every year, my favorite movies are usually some indie movie.
Yeah.
So no, I'm not going to sit here and say like, I want Marcel Lachelle to do 20 more movies.
Yeah.
Because
but you that's would watch not
the
them.
Point of Marcel Lachelle.
But you would watch them.
I would watch every one of them. And honestly, I do think it could have a sequel or two, but I hope it's not 20.
Yeah.
So it's like my favorite movies that you want to see more of. You don't really want to see more of.
Yeah. You just want to see that one again. Yeah.
Yeah.
To your point, I saw a headline that was like, they've got plans for John Wick's 5 through 9. I'm like, before it was perfect. You ended it perfectly. Stop. It's perfect. Leave it alone. I think I totally agree with both of you. I would like to see them maybe experiment with like stuff, ideas that had promise, but movies that weren't. Like something like Zardoz. Like, not a great movie, but there's something in there. You know what I mean? You could do something with
there's
it.
There's a kernel.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, don't remake Total Recall. Total Recall's fantastic. That's great. It's perfect. Nothing. No notes. But like, you know, you could take something that's not, which is completely counterintuitive. That's not what they want to do. They want to take something that everybody knows and loves and do it again. But like, maybe, you know, there's some that just didn't quite hit it. And maybe you could do more with it now. I guess that's what they keep trying to do with Tron. And that doesn't never quite gets off the ground the way they want.
As you said, fantastic DJ. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think the big one that they're going to be trying to work on for the next 20 years is Fantastic Four. We'll see. What they're able to do with that.
Yep. What were you going to say, Dan?
I will never understand when I hear even somebody just kicking the tires on an idea like, oh, let's redo Back to the Future or whatever. It's like, don't ever dare touch a movie like that. Why would you? Why would you? The further adventures of the world of Back to the Future, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
But don't remake something like that. There's no need. That's a thing that is timeless and still stands up.
Yeah, you can reuse some concepts. You can do whatever. Or like, there's plenty of options. And I think where we're landing on is, you know, allow creative people to be creative, be open to new things as an audience member, be willing, like for example, like whenever I'm picking up my pre-orders for comics, I'm always trying like new number ones from indie creators just to see maybe something will pop off to me. To that point, in the Discord, Jay Kornblatt asks, have you read the new Transformers comic by Daniel Warren Johnson? First issue just came out and it's amazing. It's the first time I've really cared for the Transformers. Of course, I picked it up, but not because it was a Transformers comic, but because it was a Daniel Warren Johnson comic.
Exactly.
And any comic he's doing, I'm buying. So
the system is consuming him.
Yeah. And it's one. It is great. Transformers 1 is great, but it's one of those. I am
nothing but proud of and happy for Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yeah, he's incredible. He's fucking. We've had him on the show. He's great, but his work is fantastic. Check out Do a Power Bomb, Extremity, Murder Falcon, all that shit. But that's my point. You follow the creator. I'm following that creator. Whenever he does something new, I'm picking that shit up. And it just so happens to be.
And it's doing well because he's a creator that is doing interesting and new and innovative things and telling good stories. And Skybound said, let's let him do what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's let Daniel Warren Johnson take this brand and tell a Daniel Warren Johnson story. And I think as long as they stay out of his way, as long as Hasbro and Skybound stay out of his way, let him tell his story, I think they'll have a really great, a lot of success with the book.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. Very exciting. So that's it. That's our thoughts on IP. Dan, where can the kids find you?
Just basically Secret Galaxy or Toy Galaxy or Dan Larson, pretty much anywhere. All of those search criteria will find me. But yeah, primarily our Secret Galaxy on YouTube and Toy Galaxy on Patreon.
There will be links in the description. Seriously, go check out his stuff. It is fantastic. Roxy, where can the kids find you?
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
You can find me at DJ Talks Trash. You can follow the show everywhere that matters at Only Stupid Answers, but on X.
Yank out the vowels from stupid.
And we will see you all next time. Thank you, everybody.